And we can see that women leads NGOs, civic organizations, so they know best what the community needs, where the needs are, and especially the needs of the most vulnerable population, children, elderly, the ill. So they can really be important ally in identifying the right actions or the right response to climate change.
Hello, I am Hanne Knapper, head of the Climate Action and Green Transition team at ECDPM, and I focus specifically on adaptation and resilience building. Today, we will be talking about gender-sensitive climate action in cities and learn how women empowerment, climate action, and urban development are interlinked. We have with us Giulia Macci, gender specialist and manager of the Euro-Mediterranean region at UNEP Cities Alliance. Welcome, Giulia.
Thank you, Anne.
So before we talk really about the content and the projects that you're doing, tell us, what is UNEP's Cities Alliance and what do you do exactly?
So the Cities Alliance is a global partnership, a multi-donor fund, which was established by the World Bank and the UN almost 20 years ago with the aim of fighting urban poverty across the world. We are part of the UN, so we are hosted by UNOPS, which is the United Nations for Operation and Services, so working primarily in infrastructure, project management. And the Cities Alliance, in fact, works in cities and with cities and the civic society on inclusive urban projects. So we work on urban planning projects, urban strategies, slum upgrading, so working with informal settlements, trying to improve the life, in fact, of the urban poor. And we involve the urban poor into the process.
So you work on, you specifically focus on the Euro-Mediterranean region, and we know that the Mediterranean region, or the Middle East and North Africa, has 11 out of the 17 most water-stressed countries in the world, and these include Tunisia, Morocco, and of course Libya. Climate change is one of the reasons for water stress, and we know that women and girls are particularly affected by water stress. Can you explain us why this is?
So as you said, climate change affects women and men differently. So extreme weather events such as droughts and floods have a greater impact on the poor and the most vulnerable. And women, of course, are among the poor, even most vulnerable. Women are also often responsible for gathering and producing food, collecting water and sourcing fuel for eating and cooking. And with climate change, these tasks are also becoming more difficult, limiting opportunities for education and income generation activities. And it's also exposed women to sexual assault and increasing violence. And also care work, which is again often a responsibility of women, due to health impact of climate change, may also increase, increasing an additional burden on women. Also in terms of producing food, women produce 60% of the food worldwide, but they are also more likely than men to report food insecurity during climate disaster. On the other side, so women are more vulnerable, but on the other side, they are also leading their communities. They are often leaders also when we work a lot, for example, in informal settlements, and we can see that women leads NGOs, civic organizations, so they know best what the community needs, where the needs are, and especially the needs of the most vulnerable population, children, elderly, the ill. So they can really be important ally in identifying the right actions or the right response to climate change. So in general, we can say that climate change and gender equality are strictly linked. On one end, climate change increases gender inequalities by exacerbating existing gender inequality and affecting women's role in resource management decision making, and also increasing caregiving responsibilities for women, limiting their access to education and economic opportunities. On the other way around, gender inequalities affect climate change responses, because gender disparities in decision making hinder inclusive climate policy formulation and implementation, And at the same time, they it restricts also women's involvement, overlooks their valuable knowledge and contributions to climate solutions. So if we want to implement, formulate and implement climate adaptation solutions, climate actions, we need to have women at the center. We need to understand their vulnerability, so understand the specific vulnerability of gender, related to gender, and we have to involve them in the decision making.
So I hear that there are two sides to this story. On the one hand, women are the most vulnerable to climate impacts. On the other hand, they have the knowledge and the solutions to build resilience, and they often lead on initiatives and so on. So if we look now specifically at the Middle East and the North African region, and also known as the MENA region, how is the situation there? How is climate and gender linked in that region of the world?
So in the MENA, we have also to consider that there are many ongoing conflicts that have resulted in substantial numbers of refugees and internally displaced people. We have to say that 58% of the global refugees comes from the Arab countries, and they mostly remain in the region, which means that they mostly move to the cities where they can find jobs, they can find support. And this intensifies even more urban growth. So I work mainly on urban projects, and this for me, it's something that we have to consider. So there are climate disaster, climate issues, as you mentioned at the beginning, you know, desertification, high level temperature, water scarcity affecting mostly this region. I think Jordan is the second most water scarce country in the world. Then we have also the issue of migration and displacement. And then we have the urbanization process. So we have to say that in the region, is the MENA region is extremely urbanized. I think more than 70% of the MENA's population lived in cities, I think in 2020. And this exceeds even the global average. And urban growth is even expected to accelerate, intensifying also the demand on municipal water supplies for both migrant and host population. So if you consider that it's already a very water scarce region, cities do not have the resources, because we are also talking about secondary cities, intermediate cities, not only the capital cities. So they have not enough resources, not have enough also capacity, skills to respond to, on one end, the climate issues, which are huge, enormous, and on the other end, this growing population. And of course, among all this, women are the ones that are most affected by these issues. Also, when we talk about informal settlements, so the new areas that are created, you know, from this accelerating urban growth, and also in refugee camp. But we, as a Cities Alliance, we work mostly in cities, so in informal settlements, in fact. Mm-hmm. Women, in fact, experience the greatest impact of climate change, and this can deepen, as I said at the beginning, pre-existing gender divides and expose women also to new vulnerabilities. Then, in addition to all this complexity, we can also say that within the region, which is a very diverse region, we also have different level of gender gaps. So if we talk about Tunisia, for instance, Tunisia is quite advanced in terms of gender equality. You know, it was one of the first countries that got the right to the divorce, for instance. There are other countries where this gender gaps is much more wide, you know, if we talk about Iran, what is happening right now. Mm-hmm. So it's not, there is no one one solution for all the region. We cannot find one solution. We have to understand, in fact, the specificities of each countries and of each city, in fact, what kind of urban dynamic are happening, what kind of climate issues, and also the cultural dimension of gender.
Yeah. Okay, so it's good that you emphasize the diversity of cities, and solutions are very different, of course, depending on context and so many different factors. But what I also hear is that in general, in the MENA region, there is a lot of pressure on these secondary cities, so not capitals, smaller cities, and a lot of displaced people going to these cities, which creates then a lot of pressure on water, you mentioned, probably also food, related to food security, and energy demand as well must be very high.
Yeah,
and all this in the face of climate impact, so it's a very complex situation. Now, perhaps we could talk a bit about the specific projects that you are doing with UNOP Cities Alliance. Can you give us some examples of what you do?
Thank you, Anne. I think in general, we have to say that adaptation, climate adaptation measures and actions needs to take into account gender inequalities, which make also adaptation less effective. How we work on three main actions. The first one is really like collecting data. We need to understand better how gender and climate is connected. So it's something that also, especially at the city level, we don't know. We don't have this data. So we talk in general about how women are affected, but we don't have this data. So if you don't have this data, you cannot advocate for more funding, you cannot advocate for more action, you cannot convince also city officials, city administrators to do something about it. No? So gender is always the last thing that we consider. So we so resilience and gender requires data. And we developed specific tools like the Health for Climate tool that we just launched, and we also used in different cities across the world, in Gambia, in Tunisia, in Nepal more recently, really understanding what we can understand through a participatory process by involving cities officials, comparing data, interviewing also women. What are the specific vulnerabilities of women, but on the other side, how women contribute to the resilience of cities? What kind of action are they undertaking? We have also developed a specific tool specifically for the MENA, which is called Air for Water, that looks at water scarcity through gender lens. And we are using it in our projects in Morocco, in Mauritania, and in Tunisia. So one is data. The second one is really designing and implement projects and actions with women. So we have to recognize that women are important contributors, and we have to involve them in every phase of the project, in designing the project, in implementing, and even monitoring the project at the end. So for instance, we are now, it's not the MENA, but we are implementing a program in Nepal on working on different cities and also at national level, which is called Cities for Women. And we really work there on one end, including women in designing climate adaptation plans at the city level. Because in Nepal, there is a strong process of decentralization. So in fact, cities do have power to implement action, implement projects. They have also participatory process in place to define action strategies, but women most of the time do not participate. They don't have time, they don't have a voice. So we improve, we support cities bringing women around the table. And then we design public space interventions and infrastructures, so green spaces, for example, better roads facility, walking facilities, thinking about gender inclusion. And then at the national level, we help the government in including gender recommendation into their urban strategy, national urban strategy. So this is, for example, Nepal. Another example from the region is in Tunisia with FAMMEDINA, which is a program that we started a few years ago, that is quite similar. We work mostly in Medina, in the Medinas, so they are historical cities, where there is also an issue of water scarcity, and there are the most, I think, traditional part of the city. So women are there, they contribute also to the economic development of the city, but they are not visible. So what we wanted to do is to make women more visible and more present in public space and more included in the economic activities of the city. So how we did it? We also there, we had a participatory process in place to develop a strategy for the cities. We include women also from different ages, different age groups. We went really close to their place, where do they live, we include them. And then we design also infrastructures, services for them. And also in terms of water, not only in Tunisia, but across the region, we are working on wash facilities, so water facilities, designed with women, and then we train also women in managing these facilities. And specifically on Mena, I think there are already historical technique, historical infrastructures. For example, in Tunisia it's called Mejel, and then in different places is a different one. So there are infrastructures that are able to collect rainfall water, can be filtered and then used. But this has not been used for years. So there, but there is a potential right now where the water price of public water is going very up, is going up, to restore these facilities, including a gender dimension. So design and implement actions. And the last, I think, important part, where I think we can also, we are trying to work together also with the CDPM, is to connect this action with advocacy. So we need also to reflect on what we do, getting results, data, stories, to also change policymaking and also to influence even policymaking at the EU level or at the international level.
Yeah, I'm glad you're mentioning working with ECDPM. I think there is a lot of opportunity there, but perhaps I can take it a step back and we can talk a bit, or like I would like to ask you about what are specifically the gaps, because you mentioned there is a lack of regional dialogue, and in what way is this really blocking the work that you do, or the lack of reflection? Why is there no space to do this? So can you explain that a bit? Why do you see these gaps in your work? How do you experience them?
There are differences across the countries, as we said, but at the same time, cities in the MENA, they face similar challenges. The climate issues are similar, the urbanization process is similar, there are conflict ongoing, and they don't have resources. They don't have a space also. The cities, especially intermediary cities in the MENA, they do not have the possibility to influence decision-making at the global level. So they are left there with no means, in fact, but they are so important to include migrants, to respond to these challenges. So we need, in fact, to empower cities, especially municipalities, to support them in facing these challenges, to improve their infrastructures, to improve their capacity, to improve also, to give them more voice. So we need, in fact, transboundary collaborations, which is not yet there, especially in the region. So we need, in fact, managing water resources, addressing food security, developing resilient infrastructure requires a regional approach that allows also cities, national governments, international partners to exchange knowledge, resources, forging also an inclusive approach to climate change in the MENA region. And this is not yet there. So there are a lot of network of cities, which of course are very key, like I can mention C40, ECLAY, UCLG, but not, there is nothing specific, in fact, on MENA, on climate. So we need, in fact, more regional approach that put together different actors discussing and finding common solution.
Yeah.
I think it's also important to mention that there are disasters that are happening constantly. So we are constantly facing also an emergency issue, something that was not really maybe the case years ago. No, so development work is getting closer and closer with more emergency or humanitarian type of work. So, for example, we are working in Morocco, which was a country relatively stable, no? Mm-hmm. And we are working in cities, we are even supporting cities in close to the border with Algeria that is facing, they're facing really specific climate issues, desertification, for instance. And now I was about to go there, in fact, to support our local team, and then the earthquake arrives. So now we are completely in a different scenario where we have to support also there very small, like small towns, small cities, to face a recovery effort, and including again women, because also in this post-earthquake scenario, women are the most affected. There are a lot of now single women, single mothers.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be included in the recovery and reconstruction process. The week after, there was the terrible
the flooding
in Libya. Mm-hmm. Also there, so we are constantly confronted with an emergency. So yeah, we need also at the same time to, of course, be there and support cities also in this kind of emergency situation, but at the same time also to accompany them in a more kind of recovery, long-term recovery. And we need also to have the time to, as you said, to reflect back, no? So to have these two parallel work. And sometimes, as is UN, we are confronted always with this kind of emergency type of work, and also the urgency of projects. No, we are going from a project to another project.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a collaboration with you, with a think tank, can really benefit our work, because we can have the time also at the same time to reflect on what we are doing, understand, learning and improving how we implement things. So for instance, we should improve for sure how we link humanitarian type of work with more development, long-term, medium-term work. And this kind of climate action, short-term action with a more long-term preparation and support of the city.
Yeah, we will gladly explore this collaboration. You say that there are indeed a lot of projects, and you mentioned earlier the Femidina project in Tunis, and I think Cities for Women in Nepal, and attended an event that you co-organized, a UNOP Cities Alliance event, titled Creating Women-Led Green Public Spaces. And there were also presentations of the work that you're doing in countries. And a question that came up again and again was how to scale up these success stories. So you have a lot of successful projects, mostly in secondary cities. At the same time, of course, like you mentioned, there are governance issues, and you need to also work on different governance levels, including a political level. So with specifically with UNOP Cities Alliance, how are you trying to scale up the successes from projects that you have implemented?
I think there are possibly three main actions that we can focus on. The first one, everything like a deep change, especially related to gender and climate, needs a lot of time. So we cannot only work through projects, from a project to another project. We need to have to establish a presence in the country, to be there, to establish trust, not only with the administrators, the government, because there is also a lot of political change, as we know, there is a lot of political instability, but also with the civil society. So to establish this trust, being there, in fact. Because sometimes also we have the impression that we do some kind of progress and then something happens and we go backwards. But in fact, it's not like that, no? We go, there is always a progress, but we have to be there. So this everything requires time.
Mm-hmm.
The second is, of course, changing the policy. So one thing is really implementing infrastructures and so on. But since the funding is also limited, it's very important also to work on the regulations and policies, because if you change, in fact, the rules of the game, then you can have a kind of more longer term change on the ground. So it's not only about, for example, changing, doing a nice public space. This is important to demonstrate what you want to do. So having an inclusive public space where women can be together is important, but you need also to come back, to go back to the policy framework and change also the policy framework, train also municipal officials, mm-hmm. and training also the rule of the game. And then I think the third one that we also mentioned is really the advocacy. So using these cases to influence funding decision, programming decision, even here in Brussels, in fact, at the EU level or in Washington, or where the funding are also decided, or at the government level also in the countries. Mm-hmm. So having always this kind of advocacy and policy debate.
So far we see that funding going to adaptation and adaptation and gender is extremely minimal. Is that something that you experience in your work? That there is this funding, adaptation funding gap?
Yes, I can see that most of the funding goes in fact to mitigation type of effort, to a lot of energy projects also in the region. And of course, a lot of funding goes to the security issue and migration. Mm-hmm. While we really need more programs that really support local actions with a strong gender lens, specific, in fact, gender projects, not only that mainstream, because there is this approach of gender mainstreaming, which is, of course, is very important that every project has a consideration on gender, but we really need program that starts with a question about where are women, where is gender, who is deciding here, how we can change things. So starting with this question, then start with a project on cities, on infrastructure, urban planning, climate.
Right, and that is why we are working together to combine strengths as a think tank on the one hand and UN agency. So you work on the implementation, data gathering, and we can then combine the results to share it here in Brussels and inform the European policy dialogue.
Yes, exactly, and I really look forward to the collaboration that we are setting up in 2024.
Yes, me too. So thank you, Julia. This helped a lot to unpack the relationship between gender, climate and cities. It has made it more understandable to our audience, I'm sure of that. Thank you, Julia, for sharing your insights with us, and thank you to our listeners for following our conversation.
Thank you.